Hello and welcome to Talking Capital. I'm Ian Barnard, CEO of CapGen. Each month, I'm joined by a member of our investment team or a guest from one of the investors in our universe to talk about the investment themes and opportunities that are available today to family investors. What is CapGen? We're a private investment office for families with capital. Our clients are sophisticated, internationally minded investors, and what we do is to help them make the most of their capital and to seek out investment opportunities across any asset class in any region of the world. So in the course of these episodes, you can expect us to cover a globally diversified portfolio of assets and sectors, be that bricks and mortar or derivatives. In summary then, this is a podcast where we discuss the questions that we think are playing on the minds of sophisticated long-term investors. If that sounds up your street, do please subscribe and you'll enjoy a new episode published on the first Thursday of each month. Welcome to this standalone episode of Talking Capital, being recorded in the early hours of the afternoon in London on Thursday, the 5th of March. The focus for this episode of our podcast is to look at the investment consequences of the war in Iran. I am joined at short notice by Quinton Price, who chairs our Asset Allocation Committee. Quinton is a long-term investor, market participant, manager of investors, investment committee chair and advisor and counsellor to many, many successful investors. So delighted that Quinton could join us. And I'm also joined by Donald McFarlane, who leads our portfolio management team here at CapGen. And Donald's responsible day-to-day for running our client portfolios. We're going to talk about the investment impact of the war in Iran. I always find these slightly odd moments, and I recall similarly with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, that we know there are terrible human stories that accompany this. There will be deaths amongst friends and foes, and every, you know, death is a human story, unique story foreshortened. So I want just to acknowledge that, but we're here to think about and talk about the investment consequences. So that's what we're going to focus on. We're going to try and divide the conversation into three areas: what we think is going on in the crisis, how it may unfold, what the market reaction has been in the context of portfolios, and we're going to take a little bit of time just to consider the outside risk of something unexpected happening. So turning to the subject at hand, Quinton, what's happened? What's the summary of what's gone on?
So Ian, the Israeli government decided to launch an attack on Iran, and they have successfully managed to kill the leader, the Ayatollah. That in itself is an unusual event in some of these things to start at that place, and I think that has some market implications. Following that, obviously, the Americans fell into line very rapidly afterwards, have joined in the assault. And the Iranians have responded by attacking a number of countries quite close to them and various American and other military air bases from what one might call the Allies.
I mean, as a sidebar, I would just note that the Israelis managed to do what the Russians failed to do in Ukraine, which is to start with a decapitation and then move on to the rest of the body. But that's for another time. So implications, Quinton, and we're going to come on and talk about the sort of investments, but your initial reflections of the broad implications of this. How do you position this?
So markets have a pretty well-documented tendency to look through these very disruptive short-term events and take the view that rational actors will resolve their differences in ways which, if you will, optimize things in the long term. And as a consequence of that, what you tend to see in markets at times like this is overreaction, which then gets rectified. And as we've seen in many, many previous examples of this, things happen which are subsequently reversed. So what we've seen initially, massive strengthening in the dollar, obviously a spike in the oil price, rise in defense stocks, etc. Everything that you would expect in these situations before has happened this time.
And I guess, is that a sort of Are we seeing buy on the dip again? So it goes down, people see value, they look through it, as you say, and then seems like a buying opportunity.
There's no doubt that, I mean, the market is driven by all sorts of different types of investors. So you've got some algorithmic models that are governing shorter term trading strategies. And then you've got some fundamental investors who are also looking to buy on dips. And I'm sure that some of that has already occurred. Not enough to take the edge off some of these movements. But as things clarify, and as yet we don't really have a clear idea of how this war is going, you would expect to normalise.
So, Quinton, really helpful. Thank you very much indeed. So, Donald, Quinton's sort of given the big view of how markets have responded. What have we seen in portfolios so far?
Yeah, so I think breaking down the market reaction into four key asset classes which do have an impact in portfolios. As Quinton rightly mentioned, we've seen a pullback in equities. It's been a mixed response. So areas of the world perhaps more sensitive to either be it oil prices or growth expectations have seen more significant negative reactions. Areas like Japan and emerging markets are at the bottom of recent returns, whereas actually the US has been more muted response. Underneath the headline returns in equities, we've seen quite a lot of sector dispersion. Quinton quite rightly mentioned defense stocks, but cyclicals versus defensives and then tech have all had significant dispersion between them. Moving on to bonds, which is not actually an asset class which we have particularly high exposure to in CapGen portfolios. Interestingly, bonds, often seen as a safe haven by investors, have not responded that way this time, largely due to the inflation expectations given the nature of the crisis. We've seen the curve in the US, Eurozone and Japan all moderately up. Commodities, perhaps in the crosshairs of this particular crisis. Clearly, we've seen a big move in the oil price, both WTI and Brent up around 20%. Gold's position as a safe haven asset again come into question on the back of very strong recent performance. Gold essentially flat to down for the week, and then broader commodities responding in line with energy up around 5%. Perhaps the purest expression of investors' reaction is in currency markets. We've seen the dollar strengthen against most major currency pairs. The yen, sometimes viewed as a safe haven asset, having it selling off in line with Japanese equities. Japan, as a reminder, is a big oil importer and therefore perhaps a more economically sensitive economy to oil prices. The Swiss franc, again, another safe haven currency. Swiss franc has been overvalued or particularly expensive for a number of years now, not perhaps catching as much of a safe haven bid this time. And then big weakness in the euro. Other winners in currency markets would be the Canadian dollar, linked again to the energy story. In terms of CapGen portfolios, portfolios are designed to be robust in the face of a number of different scenarios. And this, so far, this sell-off has been in line with our expectations and positioning.
Yes, so I think what we're saying so far is futures are known and unknowable, but thus far it's followed a sort of, if you like, a classic geostrategic crisis path of a set of market responses that are not quite forecastable, but not unsurprising when they arise. And I suppose, you know, the question that comes out of that is, well, you know, how do you prepare for that? And I think, maybe sort of stealing a punchline, I guess the answer is you can't wait for the war to start to get fit. You've got to be fit for when the war starts. It's about having the right sort of portfolio to incorporate the risk of these things happening in your portfolios.
Exactly right. I mean, the whole point about managing a portfolio with a different set of asset classes represented is that you're trying to build and optimize for resilience. And these events will happen. They've always happened. They'll continue to happen. The two questions I always ask myself in situations like this are, how much of this is now predictable and follows the sort of rubric that we're used to? And where might it diverge from that? And I think in that sense, the risk factor here is we don't know what the off-ramp is. We don't know what the sort of strategic imperative is other than to compromise, if you will, the military strength of Iran. But we don't know yet what the full implications of that are. We don't know yet whether Iran will double down with ideological fervor and, for instance, attack the oil fields in Saudi Arabia, which evidently would provoke an extraordinarily aggressive response, not only from the Americans, but from regional players. And we hope and believe that rationality will prevail, and whoever happens to be in power in Iran at the moment will realize their best efforts will be, and this is what we're hearing, served through back-channel negotiations to negotiate some sort of peace.
So building resilient portfolios, because you've got to incorporate into your thinking the fact that these things, you know, have always happened, as you say, Quentin, will continue to happen, and therefore you have to construct portfolios with these possibilities in mind. I think, Don, just making it sort of granular for a moment, how are we expressing that on the way in? So before this happened, the day before, so late last week, what were we doing in our portfolios that in your mind was about incorporating this resilience?
So we, for a while now, have recognised some valuation risk in equity markets, or certainly parts of the equity market. From a total portfolio perspective, we have been slightly cautious in the overall equity component in the portfolio. And within that, where we're looking to compound and generate strong returns, we've been leaning into areas such as emerging markets, such as Japan, value, and to some extent small cap, where we believe that the risk reward and risk adjusted returns are more appealing. Zooming out and thinking about what we're trying to do with the robust portfolios, resilient in different environments, we've got the engine room of the portfolio, return generating strategies, which will grow and compound client wealth over time, and then hedge against different risks at different times in the cycle. Those risks predominantly being inflation, deflation, and recession risk. For a while now, we've viewed the world as more, the risks being more to the inflationary side than the deflationary side. So where we have been using diversifying strategies in portfolio, it's been tilting those strategies to be protective in periods of higher inflation and higher inflation volatility. On the ground, what does that mean? It means we've been underweight bonds, so we haven't had fixed income exposure in the portfolio for a number of years. We've been using gold as part of our toolkit, as well as alternative strategies and active management for periods of higher dispersion and generally higher risk sentiment.
Donald, super helpful. I'd like to move on to talk a little bit about how one prepares oneself. We've talked about portfolio construction in the run-up to an event, the event's happening, and then it's about how you respond from there. And I wonder, Quinn, if I can turn to you. So you've managed money, you've been a participant in markets, you've managed people who are managing money in markets, you've chaired investment committees, and you advise people on how to think about investments. So you've seen it from pretty much all angles. What's your view on the right mindsets you have to have and behaviours you have to display in these circumstances? What's the right, so it's happened, what are your messages to yourself about the way in which you should think about this and respond?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the axiomatic question in these sorts of sudden, somewhat explosive events. And in a way, the short answer to that is, unless you see proper structural change to inflation growth or energy prices and supply, you probably should do not very much. That's the short answer. Just to contextualize that, we have seen, as Donald said, you know, we've seen the oil price spike. You would expect that. This is a region which produces a lot of the world's oil. But over the last 12 months, we've seen US software stocks halve in value. So you know, if we contextualize what's happened since Israel started this conflict, it's dwarfed by some of the other market moves that have nothing to do with this conflict. And we've also seen this, in a sense, shift of emphasis from the Mag 7, the Magnificent 7 tech stocks, towards the market's new favorite acronym, which is HALO stocks, which are hard assets, low obsolescence stocks. Stocks like Unilever, Procter & Gamble, that people are going to buy soap come what may. And so I think it's very important to make sure that we keep a healthy sense of perspective in this. Equally, because of the uncertainty of the intentions of the new leaders of Iran, it is possible that this escalates into something more dramatic. We don't attach a high probability to that, but we'd be foolish to ignore it completely. And again, we therefore want to make sure that, you know, we're laser-like focus on the risks that we've got and our levels of liquidity. We're always focused on those things at CapGen. But in times like this, it's a refreshing prompt to look at it and say, are we comfortable with where we are? And so far we are.
And I think doubling down on Quinton's point there, to date, we haven't seen or felt the need to take any immediate actions in portfolios. The environment in which we've seen this event happen has played out in some of our positioning. So we've seen because of valuations in global bond markets, there hasn't been so much support this time around from bonds as there has been in the past. That's been a positive place for us to be in portfolios. And I think further to Quinton's point, this type of event happens perhaps more frequently than we allow ourselves to think or to remember. And actually, portfolios so far have been very much in line with what we would have expect, whatever the source of the actual cause of the risk-off event.
Yes, I guess that's quite profound, actually, isn't it? And we touched on that in the introduction to try to separate in our minds, a little bit awkward though it sometimes can be, the human consequences of this and then the investment and market consequences. And I think the point you were making, Quinton, is things happen in markets all the time. See software stocks. And this is, for the moment, another market event. It happens to have different causes because software, I suppose, was about a change of investor sentiment on the back of people analyzing and thinking about what these new AI technologies might engender, whereas the market impact this time is because of military action. But actually, for our purposes, it's the market impact. And we're dealing with this stuff all the time. So the resilience that you were talking about, Quinton, is it's not just resilience to market events caused by military action. It's just a general resilience because things happen.
Exactly right. And just to return to your point, which is, I think all of us recognize that there are terrible, tragic human consequences to this. And there will be many hours devoted to those. And we never trivialize those. But as fiduciaries, we also have to attend to the well-being of our clients and the trust they place in us to protect their assets. And so in that context, you know, our answers are aimed at that. That doesn't in any sense belittle the terrible human consequences that we have seen and doubtless will continue to see. But there's nothing so far that suggests this is out of the ordinary in terms of conflict. The dollar almost always strengthens when you see activity of this sort. It has strengthened because it's in an area which has rendered oil supply vulnerable. The oil price has spiked. The risk premium have risen on places like small cap and EM, emerging markets, because that's what happens in situations like this as well. And so far, it's followed a very well-established rubric of reaction.
And Donald, for us, for the moment at least, you've taken no actions.
We've taken no action. Part of building resilient portfolios is we have portfolios designed to deliver in a range of outcomes. And that includes using insurance-like strategies or hedging in the portfolio, which has worked so far. It's a cushion mark-to-market losses. We are closely monitoring portfolios. The portfolio management team at CapGen does so on a daily basis. We have plans in place across the portfolios that we run for decisions that may need to be taken, but we need to remain reactive to unfolding market events.
Which takes us on to the third topic, which is the what might happen. When we chatted about this, Quinton, in the prep for this, I said, so the message is keep calm and carry on. And you said, well, yes, most of the time, but not always. And, you know, the assassination in Sarajevo didn't end well, nor the Gulf of Tonkin incident. So there are occasions when, sort of out of nowhere, these apparently passing standard geopolitical events become so much more. Do you want to talk more about that, Quinton?
Yes. And I think you summarized that well, Ian, that most of the time, these events resolve themselves in ways that markets handle in their initial reactions and the subsequent realignment, if you will, that you see from the immediate knee-jerk reaction of the traders in the market spiking oil prices and so on and so forth. The point I was making in this case is we are dealing, this is not Russia-Ukraine, and we are dealing with a regime which has very clear ideological beliefs in Iran. And if they feel that they have nothing to lose and that negotiating with the Americans is less predictable than it might have been once upon a time, and they can't trust or don't want to trust the assurances they're being given, then one has to be alive to the possibility, not probability, but possibility that they will escalate this conflict in ways that hitherto are not discounted by markets. So although I think it's a tail event in that sense, risk, it's not a zero risk. And I think it would be naive and foolish to assume that it's never going to happen. It is more sensible to assume that it's unlikely to happen, but might happen. And in this case, I think the probability of that is slightly higher than in some of the other conflicts we've seen.
And what's the mindset then that one should have, or what are the preparations you should make? How best to handle this? Is this a matter then of, you know, reading every news article that comes out every second? How do you keep in mind the balance of probability outcome, which is that this will pass, against the lower probability, very high impact event that it becomes an assassination in Sarajevo and spirals out of control? How do you approach that and think about it and sort of incorporate that in your, I mean, almost in your day-to-day life? What do you actually do?
So you have two main opportunities to confront that. One is that in situations like this, as you said, you would want to make sure you were fit before your fitness was required. So we do believe that we've got resilient portfolios that are well diversified. Diversification is your friend in situations like this, because, of course, if you're caught with some over-indexed position to a vulnerable asset, whether it is a currency, a factor, a country, a region, that can be expensive. So diversification is always your friend in that sense. And you need to be attendant also to the requirements of your clients' liquidity needs and the liquidity needs of your portfolios. But you can't run two portfolios in parallel, one which is anticipating an escalation, one which isn't. So you've got to build in that resilience into your core portfolio, and you've got to remain alive and, in a sense, nimble, so that as and when you see indications of an escalation, however small a probability it might have seemed, you will have a set of views which you will implement rapidly, which will protect you from the worst elements of escalation.
And based on your experience, Quinton, what are the top three indicators you look out for that to you are, okay, we need to take this a bit more seriously?
I mean, I think in situations like this, it is absolutely about the military reaction, if you will, in this case, of the Iranian regime. So, you know, what I'd be looking for is anything, any intelligence that made me concerned that they were about to do something which could have very dramatic effects. So, for instance, you know, I think a couple of days ago, the Americans were indicating that there was a potential attack anticipated on the Dhahran, eastern province, in general oil fields. That would have been a very seismic event and could still be a very seismic event. It does look as if quite a lot of the Iranian military capability has now been disabled, but we don't know whether it's all been disabled. And it is notable that we're getting less information out of this situation from the Americans than we've ever had before.
Yes, I would totally echo that. It is the fog of war is quite thick at the moment, isn't it? And there really isn't a lot of news come out, not from the Americans, nor indeed from on the ground in Iran. We don't really know what's happening on the streets. It is a very, very foggy war. So, Donald, what are you looking at? So, you know, Quinton sort of set the scene and sort of set out how we should think about these and the framework we should have. But you've got portfolios that you're running and you're thinking about, as Quinton said, what are the actions you would take in the event of? What are the things you're particularly looking at and particularly reflecting on?
I think what we're looking for and being mindful of is more evidence that there will be more concrete evidence that events will have longer term negative economic impacts and consequences. And when I look at portfolios today, where do I see heightened risk of negative impact from that. Perhaps in emerging markets, you know, the twin shock to emerging markets from higher oil and a stronger dollar can be painful. As I mentioned, Japanese equities are particularly sensitive to oil import prices. And then we've got some exposure to gold and gold mining, as well as broad commodities. We're in a fortunate position that actually emerging markets and Japan have been two good trades for us. They've been long-term investments which have paid off, particularly in the last, let's call it 14 months. So actually being able to reduce risk in our portfolios by just taking some profits in those more sensitive areas is something that we've talked about and are, you know, able to do quite quickly. I mentioned that we have exposure in the portfolio to value stocks, more cyclically exposed stocks. And again, to Quinton's point, managing the overall liquidity of the portfolio, that exposure is very liquid. So that's something we could very meaningfully move the portfolio in a short period of time. We don't want to be prescriptive. We want to remain nimble and, you know, assess the conditions on the field. But the profits we've made in those three areas are a clear source of being able to de-risk portfolios. A bigger question comes today in terms of what we would do with the money. As we've mentioned, perhaps bonds look slightly less appealing in this inflationary environment. For us, that's why we're content with the exposure that we have to gold in the portfolios. And I mentioned that we've been using a broader toolkit of diversifiers, including alternative strategies and within equities, some active management to position portfolios, you know, partnering with what we see as best-in-class managers to more fundamental stock picking rather than passive market exposure.
I did smile a bit as we were chatting about this beforehand, Donald, because you pointed out that the success stories up until last Friday have been, I suppose, emerging markets, Japan, not particularly the US, not particularly the dollar, and good for gold. And lo and behold, that's slightly gone into reverse, which I think is, in a way, the point that you're making, Quinton, earlier, which is things happen in markets all the time. There are trends, there's momentum, and then there are reversals. I mean, it happens that the cause of the reversal in this instance of those successful or unsuccessful positions is not not a usual one, because it's military action rather than investor sentiment or some sort of economic activity. But you, unless there is this out of the ordinary event, we should just set this in the context of markets moving and evolving and there being up cycles and down cycles and momentum and reversal.
I agree with that 100%. I'd be surprised if at the end of the year this has turned out to be the most influential event in determining the direction of markets. The thing that would change that thesis is some sort of very, very sudden, very aggressive escalation by the Iranians, which would then obviously provoke a counter-reaction. We don't have that as our central case. I don't think the investment world has it as its central case. But as I said before, one should never make it a zero-bound probability.
And in a way, it's also a hard-to-measure probability, isn't it? It's just, it's there, it is binary, and you just have to keep your eyes on the field of play and be very alert to who's moving into what position.
And be clear that if it happens, you are going to do these three things. I mean, having that playbook ex ante is vital, because that's how you don't get caught in the headlights. Donald has articulated that, I think, very well. And we'll see what evolves from here.
Yes, I have to say, you know, I've been very struck by the fact that I know that Donald and his team are on this all the time, and the research team are talking to the partner managers we use in order to get their sense of what's going on. And then we have, you know, we have wise, experienced and broadly knowledgeable sort of counselors and guides. So, you know, I feel in quite a privileged position that, you know, we have got a lot of eyes on the field, and therefore, you know, in the event that it does take this unexpected path, I'm hopeful that we can respond quickly and appropriately.
And I'm sure we will.
Any final words, Donald?
My final word, I suppose, would be to put this past few days in the broader context as well. Portfolios have been resilient last year in periods of market stress, and we were able to deliver strong returns. Actually, for the first 2 months of the year, that carried on. So we're still in a good place. We've got our eyes on the situation, and we'll be reactive when we need to be.
Donald, Quinton, thank you very much, and thank you for joining us. Bye-bye. A link to Capgen's privacy notice and full terms can be found in this podcast summary description and on our website.